On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked if movies have women in them. Are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast. Start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Hi, welcome to the Bechdel cast. My name's Jamie.
My name's Caitlin.
And this is our podcast where we talk about the role of women in movies.
And oftentimes how movies don't treat women very well.
Oh, rats.
Don't.
Yeah, as we always say here in the Bechdel cast, rats and dope. I'm excited for our episode today. I think I was pushing for this one.
I was sending texts. I'm going to be honest, I was ambivalent, but because you wanted it, it made me excited.
I'm a pusher. That's a Mean Girls quote. Doesn't matter.
I push people.
But for this one, I felt like it was worth it. More and more frequently, we have people in our mentions asking for specific movies that they would like to see discussed. And I saw this movie pop up a number of times. Sort of wanted to see it myself and didn't realize at first. So we're okay. Not to bury the lead, because you already clicked on it. You know, we're doing the new Beguiled movie by Sofia Coppola. And I didn't know at first that it had previously been another movie. But my mom was like, oh, I loved the original.
So did my mom.
Right.
She's like, because
moms
like
are
that
horny.
One. For Clint Eastwood.
Yeah, which is, you know, there's a generational thing there.
Right.
That we'll never quite understand. I wonder who that is for our generation. Like, who... Like, when I talk to my kid someday, I'm like, how are you not horny for this guy? And she's going to be like, I don't get it. I don't see it.
I don't know. When I talk to my kids, I'll be like, why are you still here? I thought I aborted you.
Oh, no. I'm going to have a whole brood, and then I'm going to sit them down and make them stare at my framed portrait of Alfred Molina.
Oh, there it is.
And be like, do you get it? And then if they don't get it, I got to lock the door, and we got to stay there until they get it.
Well, before we get too carried away with that, we should introduce our guest. Are you spitting up a hairball?
I just gave birth.
Anyway, so we have a guest, as we always do. She is great. She is a very talented writer and the writer and editor of the men's magazine, Mel.
It's Alana Hope Levinson.
Hey.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
Yeah, so we all saw the movie together.
Hours ago.
Yeah, hours ago. We were discussing it at lunch over Thai food. And also, we all saw the first version of the movie that came out in 1971 starring Clint Eastwood.
Well, I saw half of it. I kind of fell asleep. But enough to get the gist. Mm-hmm. Enough to be angry about the remake.
Right. We were talking about this as well. It's like, I don't know how I would feel about this movie if we had just seen it and it didn't have context of the first movie, because a lot of what we've talked about so far has been pretty like comparative between the two. But the first one's better.
First one is so much better. I hated this one. I thought it was not a good movie. I thought a lot of the interesting scenes and interesting characters in the first one were either very glossed over or entirely omitted. Like, the first one handled just different components of storytelling so much better. Rising tension and characters manipulating each other, etc. Like, so much better in the first one than in this adaptation from
Sofia
Coppola.
More orgy scenes in the first one.
Zero automatically makes it better.
It doesn't pass the Bechdel test if there's not an incestual orgy scene, I'm pretty sure, with the updated terms and conditions.
Right. Maybe that's the Loftus test, actually.
Oh, is that? Oh, the Loftus test is the baldest woman is in charge.
Oh, okay. Cool.
This movie does not, well, there's no bald women. All these women, they have elaborate braids.
They have two.
Yeah, the braids.
Too
the
long.
Braids were a little out of control.
The
like,
braids.
Come on.
Yeah, I was like, we know that
the Civil War is going on. Who's braiding your hair? Who's like that?
And how long? Okay, we will summarize the movie in a moment. But first, who gave Elle Fanning a crimper in 1862? It was so distracting. No one else got a crimper, but she's like, I'm the wild and loose gal.
I just figured
I have a crimper.
She slept with braids in, and then it crimped her hair.
But the crimping didn't happen before crimpers. You can't fold your hair like that. You can't do it.
She like put her hair in braids and then few hours later, took them out, and now it's, yeah, it looks crimpy.
She would have had to have folded her hair in very tiny, and then she would have had to had another student sit on it.
Sit on her face.
Sit on her hair. Sit on her face for several hours to accomplish a look that was for no one except her. I mean, she did it for herself. Who gave her a crimper?
That is an important question. Thank you for raising it.
And it would be cool in the light that this was supposed to have been a kind of pulpy movie. But the pulpiest this movie gets is you get a lot of tight shots on Colin Farrell's fucked up leg. But that's about as sexy as it gets. Yeah, you see like a little bit of, and that is gross, and I could not look at it. But some notes I took during the movie include Elle Fanning and her crimped hair is triggering me. How did Elle Fanning crimp her hair? Crimp her as weapon? That would have been cool.
That kind
if
of
she
happens,
did have electricity or a crimper.
That happens in the movie Sleepaway Camp. Let's not talk about that. Let's talk about The Beguiled.
I just blacked out the movie because it was so bad. I need a reminder of what happened in there.
I'll do the recap.
Right. So this is the 2017 version recap.
Correct. So a young girl is in the woods picking mushrooms, and she stumbles upon a wounded Union Civil War soldier.
He has an Irish accent. Why? Wait an hour. They'll make up a reason.
Right. And she's like, I belong to this seminary for girls, this school. I'll take you there, because he's wounded, his leg's all fucked up. So he goes with this girl, and they go to this school, which is run by Miss Martha, and then there's a teacher named Edwina, and there's like something like six other like teenage-ish girls
who
are the students.
With the exception of one child actor, they're all blonde ingenues.
Right, and the one that isn't blonde is chubby.
Right, yeah.
And
is the worst child actor I've ever seen.
Right, right. So just...
We've got to take her and bring her into the ocean.
I feel bad for her. Let's not be mean to her.
No. I actually think she's super cute. I was just saying she's that is like cute. They just love these like blonde, ethereal, hyper thin, like might fall over if you cough around them kind of a vibe.
Elle Fanning.
You've got some thoughts.
I'm just saying she like is, I feel like, one of the more recent incarnations of that.
Sure.
Exact. Well, when we were leaving the theater, I do believe, and I love Kirsten Dunst and Nicole Kidman in movies that are not this movie and in things that are not this thing. But I do believe that Elle Fanning, should she actually go on to like have a lifelong movie career, will play a part exactly like Kirsten Dunst at some point, and will play a part exactly like Nicole Kidman's at some point, because this is like the path forged for the ethereal blonde.
Right.
They will, you know.
Oh, yeah, just through the generations. There.
Right.
Yeah.
It was like sort of three generations of, I mean, and, you know, depending on what a gen, how old is Nicole Kidman? Impossible to tell.
She doesn't age.
Right.
She's just like a mythic figure to me. I don't know. It could be like she's 45.
She's 50.
She could be, okay.
She's 50.
Oh, wow.
So she's great. I wish they didn't put that wig on her in Big Little Lies, but I love that show.
Me too. I was going to say, I wish we watched that.
Big Little Lies was the best show ever. Nicole Kidman's wig is insane.
I know.
Anyways, what were we talking about?
Who knows? So he arrives at this house that they all have this school in, and they're like, well, do we turn him over to our soldiers? But he's wounded and he'll just die in prison. Maybe we should nurse him back to health and then we'll turn him over. And then they decide to bring him in, tend to his wound. And over the course of probably a few weeks, he starts to kind of seduce different of these women, from Miss Martha to Edwina the teacher to one of the older students.
Although that's a little tricky, because she sort of goes for him first, and then he,
right.
But he does not resist in any, you know.
True.
That's a tricky one.
And these
one.
Seduction attempts, I think, happen more clearly in the 1971 version than they do in this version. But basically, everyone's very horny. There's a lot of horny depth to this movie.
Horny depth. We're back. It's a tone poem.
It's a tone poem.
It is a tone
full
poem.
Of horny depth.
And you'll find the movies that we apply these tags to are rarely good movies. A tone poem with a lot of horny depth is a way of saying, probably don't see this one. Maybe skip it.
So different of these girls get jealous. And they're like, well, you like her? I thought you liked me. And Edwina catches him in bed with the Alicia character, Elle Fanning. So she gets very furious because he had been courting her, kind of. And so she pushes him down the stairs and it fucks his leg up even more.
This part is great in both movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is fun to see an A-list actor take a serious tumble.
So they decide to amputate his leg and he gets really upset that they cut his leg off.
He gets
like,
really
what have
pissed.
You done to me?
He gets pissed. And also this is a fun Colin Farrell moment in the movie. He trashes the whole upper floor of their house and makes elephant noises as he does so. He's like,
he throws a right fit.
Yeah. He does. He's pissed.
Mm-hmm. Then tension is running thick in the house,
to say the least.
He's
and threatening
he's like,
them.
Let me leave. I'm going to kill you all. And,
he's got the only gun.
He takes their gun and they're like, oh, God, let's just let him go. But also, he's dangerous. He might kill us. So they decide to use his love of mushrooms. Not like shrooms, but just
that
regular.
Would make actually that'd be amazing.
That would if, be like, killer.
If this whole movie was just about like tripping.
So they form this plot to murder him by feeding him poisonous mushrooms. Meanwhile, Edwina's like, but I still love him, even though I fucked his leg up. She goes and has sex with him, and then he eats the poison mushrooms and he dies, and that's pretty much it.
That
and
is
they,
what happens.
They're
That's
like,
it.
Here, take this body, the Confederacy.
Right. They do sew him a shroud.
What was that about?
That was weird. In the original version, there's like a full circle moment where it begins with them singing that song. I think it's Clint Eastwood breathily singing like, don't go to war, don't fall in love with a soldier. He'll hurt your feelings and war is not good and it's supposed to be creepy. And I think the way I did it was too beautiful.
But I have tears in my eyes.
Thank you so much. But then at the end of the movie, the women in the first movie are taking Clint Eastwood's shroom-poisoned body to bury it, as opposed to leaving it out for the Confederacy. I think that in the first movie, the implication is they are just like, this never happened, because technically, who's going to come looking for him there?
Right.
So, but in the second one, for whatever reason, let's just call it laziness, they do not bury him. They leave him out. And then there's an excruciatingly long final shot because Sofia Coppola feels that we need it.
I did not
like this movie.
Well, Alana, you pointed out that the plot of this movie is very similar. Or like it could be like a porn movie where it's just like, oh, this hot, handsome soldier goes into this house of all ladies. And what's going to happen next? It's like the pizza delivery guy story all over
totally.
Again. Totally.
Yeah, I feel like, and that's one of its strengths, the first one, at least, is it really leans into that element where it's like, what is this? I mean, Sofia Coppola like rewrote it, the second one, but the first one was written by a man.
The first one was written by a man and it was adapted by a book that, let me double triple check, but was, I believe, written by a man.
Right. Because I feel like a woman wouldn't dream up this plot, right? It's like there's this house of like sex-starved women because it's wartime. And they haven't seen a man in 10 years. And then this soldier who's like bloodied and hot, it like comes hobbling into their home and then convalesces. They nurse him back to health and then just like are immediately just like need the D. And
all of them,
even the
child.
But and, I thought you loved me.
Oh,
oh my God. This reminds me of the part in Monty Python and the Holy Grail where I forget which
they're great
knight.
To women. Just kidding.
No, it's a terrible movie to women. But there's a scene where one of the knights finds this castle with all these horny ass women in it. And they're like, oh, you put out the thing. It's just like a bunch of horny women who are trying to fuck this one knight. And he's like, I have a quest to get on. I gotta go. And then it's really funny. Good story, Caitlin.
I love it. I want to know why this story for Sofia Coppola, as we discuss it, I will also actively seek out the answer. But why is this a story that Sofia Coppola is like, you know who needs to update this and whitewash the fuck out of it? Me. Also, just for, I do have the Wikipedia page for The Beguiled 2017 pulled up right now just to put my mind at rest, saying it's not making a lot of money. It isn't. But see also film remakes, whitewashing in film. Those are the two suggestions attached to this video. And we should talk about that. But this talking about Sofia Coppola is tricky. It's hard. This movie debuted at Cannes, and Sofia Coppola won the Best Director Award at Cannes for this movie for some reason.
Which is confusing.
This is like,
because it's not a good movie.
But she was the first woman in 56 years to have that distinction, and so and is only the second woman ever to have it. So it's hard, well, because the movie objectively blows.
Yeah.
But.
Well, right. Good for her for winning an award that does not often go to women. That's nice. Does she handle different parts of the movie well? No, she doesn't.
Well, Alana, what's your experience of Sofia Coppola in general, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, I, growing up, was a huge fan because of Virgin Suicides, Lost in Translation. Like, I think those came out when I was coming of age, and they felt really important to me, and still are, especially Lost in Translation. But I don't know, I kind of was, like, looking back at her filmography, and I was like, she really hasn't made that many movies, especially, like, since...
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
So there was Marie Antoinette, Bling Ring, which I didn't know was a movie.
Yeah.
And I know that, like, her entire career, my friend Alana Massey, who just wrote a great book called All the Lives I Want, writes a chapter about the Virgin Suicides. And something I remember was just how harsh Sofia Coppola has been treated, like, by the press, even though, you know, she had all these advantages knowing who her father is. But, like, people didn't take her movies seriously because they were about women, especially Virgin Suicides, which was about teenage girls. But I don't know. I feel like... now's the time, though, for her to, like she can't just rest on that.
Right. It's hard because I The Virgin Suicides was one of my favorites growing up. I for some reason didn't see Lost in Translation until, like, very recently. But, and then Marie Antoinette is the best music video I've ever seen in my entire life, even though nothing happens and it's expensive. But, like, she's very visual. She tells, for the most part, what can technically be classified as women's stories.
Mm-hmm.
And is part of such a small group of people who have, like, achieved mainstream success as a female director, that it's like, but that said, this movie stinks.
I hope to one day live in a world where there are, you know, just because we're women and she's a woman, we don't have to be like, well, cut her some slack. Like, I'm not a fan of her work. I don't remember Virgin Suicides that well. I remember being pretty bored by Lost in Translation. Mm-hmm. Sorry. I didn't see...
Please fight.
Well, I also don't think her movies really age well, is another thing I'll say.
That seems to have happened a lot.
Yeah. Well, but it's like Lost in Translation felt like when you saw it at that time. Now there have been so many movies like that if you see it, you're like, I don't get why this is...
And even, like, improvements upon that same sort of formula. Where, I mean, at the time I saw Virgin Suicides for the first time, I was like, you know, because, like, I'd never seen a movie like that before. And it was just, like, a cool... Like, the ethereal blonde is very appealing when you're young, and you're, especially when you're, like, the same age as those characters, and you're like, oh, I want to see myself as, like, this very complicated, tragic, like, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you know, she is in her 40s now. She was in her 20s when she directed Virgin Suicides, and it's like, I don't know, I just felt like there wasn't a lot of... You watch Virgin Suicides, you watch Lost in Translation, and then you watch this movie, and there's just, like, not a lot of growth.
Yeah. Right. And, I mean, for her and her position, I mean, maybe this is just me, I don't know, but I feel like she has a responsibility as, like, one of the very few kind of household name female directors to, like, make better movies that...
Well, that's a hard thing, too, then, because it's like that... Because then we're, like, doubling down on, I don't want to make her responsible for all women directors. And like, right. there are so many, you know, it's okay for a female director to have a crummy movie. Like,
right. And like,
it's going to happen.
In an ideal world, there would just be so many female directors that she's just one of the ones that I don't like. And then there's a bunch of other ones I do like. But because she's one of the more notable ones, she has a lot of attention on her. So then we maybe criticize her work more.
But also, like, her shtick doesn't really work as well, like, in 2017 right now. Like, you just feel, you're like, really? Like, these, like, ethereal blonde white women. Like, it just doesn't, like, work in the current, like, administration world. It doesn't feel like it's grappling with issues that feel urgent right now.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Where I guess, because Virgin Suicides came out at the end of the Clinton era.
Okay.
Where it's like, maybe we're feeling a little more safe. Maybe we're feeling, I don't understand why this was the moment for her to say, I want to, first of all, make a Civil War picture, but I don't want anyone who isn't white to be in it because I don't feel like that's, and that's, you know, a whole discussion. And it just didn't make sense for me for this to be the story that she felt the need to tell because her signature style isn't super relevant to the world right now. I don't really think so, but you know, if you're determined to use that same format, then find a story where that makes sense. Like, at least for Marie Antoinette, that format works because there's nothing pushing up against it. And there's not really that much that she had to ignore and actively cut out in order to accomplish the whole, you know, pretty music video. I didn't understand why this was the source material she wanted to use.
Right. I don't either. Especially because, like you hinted at, she totally deleted. So in the 1971 version, I'm guessing also in the book, and who knows how many other characters from the book either adaptation left out. But in the Clint Eastwood film, the one that he's in, there's a slave character named Hallie, and she is the only woman or person of color in the whole movie, but that character gets completely erased in this version. And there's an article that I already linked to on our Twitter page that I recommend people read by Clarkeisha Kent. It says, Coppola explained that she wanted to focus on the gender dynamics rather than the racial ones of this movie. And then the writer goes on to say that I call bullshit on this mostly because black women find themselves at the intersection of both. And because white women are not devoid of race, no matter how badly they want to be. And then she goes on to say that Coppola removing the black female characters ensures that she doesn't have to deal with how white women were complicit in slavery.
The counterpoint that she provides to this, because people have asked her this question. First of all, we would also like to remind you that Sofia Coppola does not know what the Bechdel test is or has learned in the past 2 weeks. Whatever. I get that, you know, sensationalism and clickbait, that's a whole thing. But her response to that was to paraphrase, and we'll post the sources for this as well, but that because she is a white woman of privilege, that she felt that she was not equipped to write a character who was black and who was a slave. And I understand that, but I also feel that her job is to tell a story. No one is forcing her to tell this particular story, but it's the one she's deciding to tell. And so if you're deciding to tell a story about the Civil War that takes place in the South in 1862, then you're gonna have to fucking do your research. You can't just cut out the parts that aren't immediately relevant to your personal experience. If, you know, you have to do research. You have to find someone to write the story with you. You have to find someone who has perspective on this issue. You can't just say, like, well, you know, I'm a white lady, so I can only write movies with ladies who are just like me. Or
which is what I was trying to say.
And that's another hard thing to, but she's wrong.
That's the point I was trying to make when I was like, it's her responsibility to make better movies. I didn't mean better as in like better quality, although she could stand to do that as well, especially considering this Beguiled movie. But I meant like she, I think, just has the responsibility because she's like, I have influence in this world. I can get movies made. I can make movies that a lot of people are going to see. I think then she has a responsibility to do what you're saying, do the research, include the characters that are relevant to the story and put them in there. And
or pick a different
story that's more important. Or, I mean, if you don't want to make films like that, that's fine.
Well, it's also weird to take a movie that is essentially like all about race and then say, I can't handle this in the movie. Like, it's set in the middle of the Civil War. So, like, she can't really take it out of the movie.
And
she tried.
There's not a non-white character in this whole movie.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
So, you know, maybe she should have just set it in a different time period or something if she wanted to do that. Or, like, done a different movie about this, a modern update of it.
Sure.
Exactly. It's like an apartment in Bushwick. They're stuck there for some reason. I don't know.
Right.
It's about global warming.
Like, oh, yeah. It's,
I'm trying to think.
Manhattan
is sinking. So they're stuck. I don't know. I'm just spitballing here.
No, but yeah.
But like, you can't. And I mean, also the reason why I think her reaction has really bothered people and why it really bothers me is like, this is the problem with white feminism is like, oh, well, race and gender, I don't want to handle the race thing because they're not related. It's like, no, they're totally related.
Right.
And the fact that you deny that is really problematic.
Mm-hmm. And just another way of being privileged and not having to deal, because you don't have to deal with it.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, for me, it just boils down to, regardless of gender, race, anything, do your fucking job. Like, and her job is to tell a story competently and in a way that, because she's choosing to adapt, is faithful to the source material. And she fails to do that in this movie.
Right.
So no matter, like, you know, she fucked up.
Yeah.
Right. She fucked up.
And I think that because, like, some of the major themes of the movie are agency and the idea of being a prisoner, what that means, et cetera, et cetera. She actually does a disservice to her movie by not including it. Like, the characters' motivations don't make sense. You don't really understand what's at stake for these people. Like, their backstories, like, she cuts all that out because I think she's trying to, like, I don't know, she's trying to get around this. And I think she kind of shot herself in the foot because now it just feels like a movie where women are wearing like shirts all the way to their neck and just like are walking around in their house. Like, I don't know. It just lost all the depth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, let's talk about the way it is adapted a little bit, because I feel like she is, you know, she chooses this story for reasons I cannot find a concrete reason that she was like, whatever. But she has the interesting opportunity of, she's adapting a story that was written by a man that was then adapted by a man, and she's adapting that. So she's in some ways kind of the first female major creative hand to even be involved in this story.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, cuts out so much and I mean, most notably cuts out the only non-white character in the entire story. And there is in the book, Hallie, the slave character, was altered from the book to the first movie, but she's still there, you know.
She's there, and I would argue is the most interesting character from the 1971 film.
For sure. I mean, it's like, you know, she's there, and then there are a few great scenes between her. I want to make sure I get the actress's name. Mae Mercer plays her in the 1971 movie, and there are several scenes between her and Clint Eastwood's character, John McBee, that are, you know, if not perfectly done, at least thought-provoking, and her character is given fucking screen time and perspective. There's the scene where she's helping him out with whatever, his leg is always bleeding, it seems like. And they have this conversation about being a prisoner and freedom.
Oh, and then he's like, you and I should be friends.
Because Clint, he's always looking for allies.
He loves a good ally.
That's Clint's whole game.
He's basically,
he's like, who's on my side?
Implying that, like, I'm fighting for you. Like, I'm fighting for the Union. So we're trying to end slavery. And she's like, white men aren't killing each other because you care about us. And then she says the N-word, which I'm not going to repeat. So, because you care about us, black people will say. But she's the best character in that version.
Yeah, she's
of
like
the
truth teller that actually, like, she connects all of the characters, like the ideas, back to the state or the politics, which I think is really important. Like, I'm trying to think of the other.
It's so relevant to, like, the time and the place that they're in, that
Right.
Not having her there is crazy.
Yeah, like there's this one conversation where like he says, we're both prisoners, which is interesting because he sees himself as like a prisoner in that house, even though they've nursed him back to health.
Yeah, and she's like, the only difference
is that I can run away, which is an interesting thing to say because it's like, well, she can't really either.
Right.
But what does it mean to be like physically held in a place versus just being
by
a slave? Right.
Right.
I don't know. So it's like all of those. And she's also the only one, right, that like shoots him down.
Yes. So there's a scene late in the movie, and this exact character switch happens to both Clint Eastwood and then Colin Farrell, who plays his character in the modern movie. But it makes sense in the 1971 movie and is completely out of nowhere, borderline confusing in this adaptation. But towards the end of the movie, McBee's leg is amputated. Mm-hmm. And we are led to believe in both movies, rightfully so, like they had to do it. But he doesn't believe that. He thinks that they amputated his leg for revenge. He realizes his leg is amputated. He freaks the fuck out, takes the only gun in the house, and basically, you know, now all the women in the house are the prisoner and he's not anymore. Mm-hmm. And he's yelling, and he's in the first movie. I mean, he is like pretty. He's like, I'm going to rape everybody.
Yeah, he becomes like a feral beast.
Yeah, like it's extremely. He goes, okay, the best scene in the first movie is little Amy who rescues him. Also, we haven't talked about how he Frenches her. But
we'll get there.
But little Amy, who is in the first movie especially in love and has like this crush on Clint Eastwood, has a pet turtle. And in both movies, it's like, why would you do that? But she is holding her turtle, and Clint Eastwood yanks the turtle from her and flings it across the kitchen, and it dies. And I feel like for that audience, that's the point where we're like, maybe he's not a good guy after all. He threw that turtle. But after he basically says, okay, you're my prisoners now. I'm going to have sex with whoever I want, or I'll kill you. And then the white women disperse.
They're like, okay, sir.
They're like, ah. And then there's another scene between Clint Eastwood and Mae Mercer where he says, basically, he's like, well, you're first. Like, come down to the basement. We're doing this right now. And she is the only person in the entire movie to openly defy him, as opposed to all the, you know, tricks that the movie is based around. And she basically says, you better like it with a dead black woman, because that's the only way you're going to get it from me, is like, you know, mm-hmm. over my dead body, basically. Right. And then he folds and leaves. And that is the last major interaction those two characters have.
Yeah.
And that felt like an important thing to happen, mm-hmm. not just because we needed more of that character, but also because she's the only character who is not actively manipulating it, and she's just like, no.
All these other women, these stupid white women, are like falling for his.
There'd be no movie if the white women weren't so dumb,
right?
That's most movies, right?
Yeah. So she's the only one who like sees right through him, doesn't fall for his tricks and his manipulations, and then all the other women are like, oh, I haven't seen a man in 4 years. Oh, my Southern Belle, and I just want to fuck. That's what they say, right?
Yeah, there. I mean, was that both during horny. Both versions? I was just like, this guy ain't shit. Like, he's not. Like, he does not. Like, it would be one thing if they set him up as like really He doesn't even. He's not even that charming.
Right.
Like, get Ryan Gosling to play him. Maybe I'll play him then.
Clint Eastwood seems crazy from moment one in the first movie because he. First scene, makes out with a kid.
Yes.
He makes out with a kid.
Here's what happens. She finds him.
He makes out with
some other soldiers. Like, he hears them off in the distance, and he doesn't want to get caught. So he's like, I have to kiss this kid as a diversion.
Oh, is that why he does
that? I think.
I thought it was because he was, like, about to die. And he was like, oh, I'm going in and out.
No. Right. I was thinking of it, like, to invoke a past episode of the cast, I was thinking of it like a random, like, oh, this is kind of scary. Like, when Brendan Fraser lunges at Rachel Weisz when he's in that cage in The Mummy is just like, I kissed you because I wanted to. And then you're like, that was
it might have been that, but that was an assault. I think that was motivated by there were soldiers running past.
Yes,
so he's like,
true.
If we're just kissing, they won't bother us, I guess.
Oh,
not an excuse.
I have a 40-year-old man, French, a child.
Well, he goes, yeah, he's like,
no one will notice anything.
He hears
awry.
The soldiers approaching, and then he goes, how old are you? And she's like, 12, 13 in September. And then he's like, old enough to kiss, and then grabs her face and kisses
he
her.
He says, old enough to
or old enough for kisses or something like that.
It's bananas.
And then
from that moment on, because she's, you know, 12, she's like, I love him.
Right.
Because
her character actually makes the most sense in my mind.
I agree.
Like, she's the only one where you're like, okay, I get why you're in love with him because you're 12 and like this is
and he's
crazy.
We're being led to believe a charming, handsome man, even though no one's really proved that to us in either movie. But sure, sometimes he's Irish, sometimes
and well,
but like Amy, I like Amy's character.
Well, and so, I think outside of that is like the new movie basically just kind of takes out all of the sexuality. I mean, it's there
right.
a little bit. But in the first movie, part of what makes it so great is it's just like there are all these like sexual fantasy scenes and flashbacks
right,
and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that when Sofia Coppola adapted it, she took away like all of the female sexuality. Like, why would you do that? Unless her argument is like, oh, that was because men wrote it and they were like trying to like write in these like porny things. But I think
but
it
it's
just
like then now we just have a boring movie.
Yeah,
and what
it's
are we
just
supposed
boring.
To do?
And it's like, for example, Elle Fanning, her character in the first one is like incredibly hot and also just like really, really like.
She does like a
all, like frame... a full-blown seduction is like
right.
Oh, you won't like I know more than you think. Like
I would be his royal penis cleaner. Callback to Coming to America.
Wow, I love that.
Because she's like I'd clean in places that you wouldn't, and
right.
then
like she's
Edwina's
so
like
horny.
You're such a hussy. She was hussy shamed, and I don't care for that. But and that's what I'm going to call hussy shaming from now on.
But again, that's like the another character where okay, first of all. This is a fucking Southern Gothic story, and the point of Southern Gothic stories is that most of the people in them are like deluded and strung out. Like that's like a hallmark of this genre of mm-hmm. like, you know, and we have the ingredients for that where it's like these women have been stuck with each other for a long period of time. They're always in danger, but they're also extremely bored. You can see why. And the book in the 1971, it's too much. It's like the Miss Martha apparently used to fuck her brother and thinks about that a lot and then goes to Clint Eastwood and is like, well, it won't be the same, but...
but you'll do.
Sort of. And I mean, but there's like, you see the sexuality like play out because that's really what the story's about. It's a softcore porn.
Right.
With a theme
yeah.
and nice costumes.
Well, I mean, at its core, I have a big problem with any rendition of the story. I haven't read the book, but with
right.
both versions of the film, it's basically suggesting that there's a group of women
right.
and they're getting along fine. And it's the Civil War, but they're still trucking along and learning French and everything's great until...
Yeah.
A man shows up and they just all
mm-hmm.
want to fuck him. So they're all they're jealous of each
right.
other. And they're like basically everyone's world falls apart because of the introduction of this man. So I think a better version of this story is he comes along. He's an enemy. They take him as like a prisoner of war and they feel compassion for him. So they're like, we'll nurse him back to health. We don't want him to die, per se.
Right.
But then he as he starts to try to manipulate these women. A better version of the story would be if they don't fall for it
right.
and then they have to retaliate and be
or
like,
yeah,
if
it
loves
kill
you.
Him.
Yeah.
yeah.
If at least one of them doesn't fall for it for 3/4 of the movie,
right.
it just goes on for so long, like scene after scene after scene. Even in the good one, it's scene after scene of like a different girl goes into his room, he seduces them. Now he has another ally. And then we see a bunch of near misses of the women talking to each other and it's like, ooh, are they going to find out? No, not this time. But at least there's some suspense. This, oh God, I couldn't stand it. There's no suspense. There's not
yeah.
really any, there's not a major character that has a lot of doubt in him, which I thought was interesting. Shout out
mm-hmm.
to my favorite movie, Doubt. but there, I feel like that, I mean, and this would go all the way back to when the story was originally written, but like there's, you know, there's seven women in this house, I think. And not, you know, and I feel like there's one of them, like the little girl who plays the fiddle, is sometimes like,
she was the one.
Like there is one girl who sort of had some doubts, but she was in no way a major character and was always just there like, no, we want to fuck him. Shut up. Like it would have been interesting if there was like a little agent of chaos trying to figure out mm-hmm. what he was actually up to versus like trying to fuck him. But that's a note for everybody, not just for Sophia Coppola.
Oh, another scene that was in the original version that was taken out of this one was, again, Sophia Coppola just erasing any moment of tension that might be, was when the Confederate soldiers come to the house right. at night and they're like, we're here to protect you. And they're like, actually, we're okay. And they're like, no, we really think you should be protected by us. And they're giving off very rapey vibes. And Miss Martha keeps insisting, like, no, we're fine. Please leave now. Good night. Thank you. And then they're just like, they're very persistent and it's extremely uncomfortable and it's very tense because all the girls are like scared and rightfully so because they're presumably coming in to rape them all.
They think that, I mean, it seems like they're right. Like, no matter what soldier comes to the house, regardless of what side they're on, they're afraid of all of them.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that Sophia Coppola, like, do they ever say the word rape in the new one?
They may say rape one time. I feel like maybe in the first scene where someone's like, oh, you know that all those Yankees are going to rape us. I think they do say that one time. And then there's another scene where when the soldiers do show up, but Sophia Coppola's like, you know what, moment of tension. Don't need it. More
they just
pink.
Come in and they're like, where are they? She's like, they're in the kitchen getting a bite to eat.
Sammy's.
You know what I feel like? I feel like it wasn't even that she was like her answer of, I just didn't write it in because I don't know their perspective. It's almost like she took that original script and was like, I'm going to write out any, like, I'm not going to touch anything that's going to get me in trouble on the internet. Like, I'm going to write out the rape. I'm going to write out,
which, and
like,
in so doing,
gets
got herself into it.
But it's like, she just kind of like every kind of thing in the movie that was like, interesting and sort of edgy, she just decides to not address, which is super weird because it ends up being just the least edgy or interesting movie in the world.
It's weird what she keeps and what she doesn't. And there is, like, Nicole Kidman does say at one point after she makes the soldiers Sammy's and they're downstairs, we never even see them leave, they're never referenced again that I remember, but there was like one of the little girls leaving and saying like, oh, can I go downstairs and say hi? And then she's like, nope, don't tempt them. And I was like,
remove temptation,
right.
But in the other one, you see them like leering around and they look like
all
drunk
but lunging,
and scary. Like, right. They're so creepy.
It's a very tense scene. And I was like, oh, I was worried for those girls and women because I was like, they're going to force their way into the house.
And by the way, then you get the context of like why it's so hot that they have this guy that's kind of their prisoner, because the way that sexuality is framed in every other context in the movie is like them being raped. So it's like kind of cool that like you understand like, oh, there's this guy, he can't walk and he's safe.
Yeah.
At the very least.
He's
until
non-threatening for now.
Right.
Until he starts throwing turtles around. Now we're all in trouble.
By the way,
the old turtle toss.
Back to the crimping. Was anyone else like, they had turtles as pets back there? Where the fuck
Where'd
did they
get a turtle?
Yeah,
from the swamp?
Yeah.
Maybe from the swamp.
I mean, I got my turtle in like San Diego back in the day.
I got my turtle at...
At some boardwalk.
I bought it on the side of the street.
Anyway, it's a little crazy to me that, you know, during the Civil War, there were pet turtles. Who knew?
Something that Sophia Coppola kept that bothered me about the first movie and was like one of those things where I was like, oh, yeah, this movie and its source material is written by a man. So there is that major moment where Edwina catches L. Crimped Fanning.
Alicia is her
Alicia, Carol in the first movie, and McBee in bed. This is a huge moment. And then after we break Colin Farrell's leg and it's all fucked up and gross, there is a brief exchange in both movies where Elle Fanning lies and is like, he came after me, he attacked me, you know. And so she's trying to get herself off the hook by basically saying that he raped her.
Right.
To which Edwina responds in both movies by being like, oh, she's such a liar. You know, and then Miss Martha says, well, we don't know. It could be either way, mm-hmm. which is just like a dangerous precedent to set no matter what you're doing it in.
Yeah.
But it's hard because it's like that is crucial to the story. But that bugged me in the first movie. And I was like, oh, well, it seems like Sofia Coppola is writing out a lot of stuff. Maybe what's she going to do with this? But she's like, nah,
kept it.
Keep it.
So that character, her name is Carol in the 71 version.
Only character name has changed.
Why? I don't know.
What's wrong with Carol?
Oh, probably because that movie, Carol. Oh, you guys should do that movie.
We should do Carol.
No two characters in any movie can have the same name. No. Sorry.
I mean, the main male character's name is John, after all.
He's the first John in any movie.
Yeah. Yes, but Carol is an iconic name.
Carol, come on.
But I liked that character, Carol, in the 1971 version. I just like that she was in control of her sexuality, and she's like, that's a guy. I don't want to fuck him. And so what if I'm 17? I'm going to still...
Yeah, old enough for kissing.
Old enough for kissing.
That's what they say. Because they set it up that, you know, she just is... I mean, she's a teen. She's fooled around before. It actually makes sense that she's, like, going to fool around with the, like, soldier that's convalescing in the next room. It's with, like, the older characters that it doesn't make as much sense.
Right. And again, it makes sense when Clint Eastwood does it because he's actively manipulating everyone. But Colin Farrell's version of this character is not actively manipulating everyone, so it's confusing. Like, and especially when, if we had just seen the 2017 version, I would have no idea why he goes to Elle Fanning's room instead of Kirsten Dunst. That would make no sense. Like, I don't get, in the first movie, he's sort of blackmailed by Carol, who gets jealous at one point in the movie and basically tries to sell him out and give him up to the other soldiers and almost gets away with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then he finds out that she was responsible for it, and she was just like, well, don't make me jealous. And so Clint Eastwood in the first movie is like threatened by her and a little bit afraid of her.
Better go fuck her then.
And he's sort of like, I mean, she's really the only character that he seems like threatened by until he loses his leg. and he loses his shit. But, like, it makes sense why he goes to her in the first one, because he feels like she has some sort of power over him and has the ability to fuck him over. So of all the options he has set up for himself.
Right. So even though, like, Carol isn't an admirable person, I don't like her or identify with her, but I just like that she was sort of playing his game. She's like, well, if you're going to manipulate all these people, I can do that too. So it was just at the very least.
I actually kind of do. If I had to pick one and I was watching the 1971, I was like, who do you identify? It would be Carol.
Carol.
I don't know. Carol's kind of badass. Like, you know.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think she's a very interesting character. And Edwina's a little bit frustrating because she's so naive, especially in the first movie.
Poor Edwina. I feel for her. I feel like I most closely identify with Edwina, and
really?
I'm sorry.
Oh my gosh. I hate in the Coppola version, I hate that character.
Everything in the Coppola version is worse. But in the first one, she's like, I'm 22. And then he like kisses her. She's like, I don't know how. And he's,
God.
I don't know. Like, I feel that way all the time. Where I'm just like, I don't know. Don't hurt my feelings, please. And like, I don't know. Her naiveness comes across in a more convincing
way.
It's
more genuine.
And Alana, you were saying this earlier. Like, for that character, Kirsten Dunst is not of an appropriate age because she's in her early 30s, and it wouldn't make sense that a woman in her early 30s would be...
Is she real? I thought she was older than that, but maybe
she's
I'm wrong.
35.
Okay.
But, like, they don't state Edwina's age in this movie. They do in the first one. They say she's 22 and that she's been in this school for 7 years.
Right.
So it totally makes sense that her attitude towards men would be like, I don't know.
I don't trust you.
And this is something I wanted to talk about. Again, it's a big comparative thing, but in the first movie, there is this whole built-in structure where every major female character is made clear that they don't trust men. And Clint Eastwood sort of asks all of them, why don't you trust men? Men are great. Men are great. Men are cool. Can I fuck you? Men are great. Trust us. We're cool. It's told through sometimes flashbacks. Sometimes they just state it. But we figure out why every woman in the house doesn't trust a man. Sometimes it's whoops, I fucked my brother. Sometimes it's like a father issue. And it's like everyone is given some sort of reason of like why they are not so quick to trust him. And that felt like really, of all the stuff in the first movie, something that could be really useful to Sofia Coppola. Right.
Yeah. And these are reasons, they're giving reasons why they don't trust him, but in doing that are also explaining why they end up doing it so easily. Like, they have these issues, right? So it's like, oh, I had this thing happen which makes me not trust men, but it's also why I'm kind of like, just want to believe that you're different, sort of.
Exactly,
Which is
a relatable thing.
Yeah, totally. But then they just take that away and you're like,
None of that is given in the new one. And the thing I really liked about the first movie is that the first character we meet in both movies is Amy. Mm-hmm. She's picking shrooms. She comes across
a ghoulish soldier. She's like, I gotta get my psychedelic fix on. I gotta do these shrooms.
Depending on the adaptation, she Frenches them. Right. And it's, again, very, like, cheesy in the first one, but it's a Southern Gothic story, so it's supposed to be. But where, like, Amy is talking to Clint when he's, I don't remember, it's either right before he loses his leg or right after. I think right after. And, oh, she finds out that he'd been hooking up with everyone she's ever met in her entire life. Which must be hard when you're 12. I'm like, you fucked everyone I know. And
it's really just getting her ready for what it's going to be like dating.
It's sort of, he's like, I'm just prepping you for this scene.
Yeah, yeah. Wait till you get to college.
It's rough out there. But he's like, fucked her, all the maternal figures she's ever had. And, you know, there's like the little child actor and she's just like, but I thought you loved me. And he was like, I do. And then she's pissed. And then he throws her turtle. And then she's like,
he needs to die.
But by the end of the movie, where Amy is sort of the driving force between so many major events, where she finds him and at the request of Miss Martha, she gets the stuff to kill him by picking the poisonous mushrooms. And by the end of the movie, you almost get the feeling that it's like, oh, this whole movie is Amy's future flashback to why she will never trust men, is because this handsome, like, we are to believe, this handsome soldier who Frenched her while he was covered in dirt turned out to be a pretty bad guy.
Who would have thunk?
I know.
Was anyone else mad? Like, basically, when he's around, like, threatening them with the gun, and I keep thinking, like, there's one of him, there's, like, 10 of you.
Someone kick him.
But then when they're like, we have to poison him with the mushrooms, I just kind of wanted them to, like, get the gun and kill him. And I was like, why did they have to kill him in a, like, this feminine way, which is, like, poisoning you with the food we make?
Right.
And maybe that's a function of the time, but I wanted them to go straight up, like, just,
yeah,
like,
just a, there were hatchets around. There was
just a plot question. Like, they fucking
got
knives. Off.
Oh, yeah, they cut his... No, they're like, we need to kill him in a dignified way by watching him choke to death.
Right, because someone's like, let's hang him. And they're like, let's not resort to such brutalities. It's like, you're going to poison him. Like,
I mean, and maybe this is, maybe what they were trying... The closest I can get to devil's advocate there is, like, maybe they were trying to express some sort of double standard of... Because at the beginning, they're like, you should have just let him bleed out. Not our problem. And then they're like, but we don't want to kill him. Even though he's fucked us all and it wants to kill us. I don't know.
I mean, I think, yeah, maybe, but I don't know. Because I feel like if we're supposed to see this as some story of empowerment, I don't know how we're supposed to see this.
No, that just didn't feel
very... I was just kind of like,
If Sofia Coppola had... Okay. I'm sorry to keep yelling at her.
Rewrite it
to
that they, like, take a saw and just fucking hack him into a million pieces.
Right. Like, there was no... This was a redo of the first movie with no details changed, but many just left out. Yeah. Like, there wasn't much altered.
Shot in the same house that Beyoncé shot Lemonade. Adding more insult
to
the fact that she omitted the black character. Yeah.
There's like a scene or like a shot in the new Beguiled where Elle Fanning does exactly what Vivien Leigh does in like a scene in Gone with the Wind. And I'm just like, I'm going to fight Elle Fanning and I'm going to win.
What does she do?
How dare you? She pinches her cheeks.
Oh, yeah, to make them red.
Right, which is what Scarlett O'Hara does right before she goes to meet Ashley. And anyways, this movie stinks. Don't invoke a good movie in a bad movie. That's mean.
I have never seen Gone with the Wind. But
wow. It has its problems.
It is one of
the best movies of all time.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's one of my favorites.
I know that you like it. One last thing I would just say is that usually when we talk about a movie in the context of this podcast, it's like, there aren't enough women in it, or the men outnumber the women. And that's certainly not a problem that this movie has. But I don't know. This is just a complicated movie to talk about because there are characters that I suppose are somewhat developed, although in this version we don't get a lot of their backstory or their flashbacks, so we don't really understand where a lot of them are coming from. So that's a bit disheartening. But the problems that a lot of movies have in portraying women don't really apply to this movie, but so there's a whole other thing that's wrong with this movie, which is like a man shows up and everyone fucks everything up.
Yeah, I mean, if it passes the test, but it also, the main problem of the movie is, though, that, like, these women have no identity outside of the guy that they want.
Yeah, right. The man is the inciting incident to the movie.
So it doesn't, it's, like, cool that there are a lot of women in the movie, but I'd take less women for ones that had more agency outside fucking this guy who sucks.
Right, like, this movie passes the Bechdel test, but the issues of why it doesn't pass more are, like, basically baked into the story itself.
Right.
Right.
So it's which is interesting. That's a new problem for us. There's always a new problem.
There's always something new.
It speaks to why the test actually like isn't enough.
The test
it's
for
true.
Sure isn't
it's
enough.
True.
Yeah. Not that you said it was, but saying like, you know, you can pass and still be like really.
Right. Although most of the scenes where women are talking, they are talking about John McBee. There's a few where they're not. They're taking French lessons. They're talking about French. They're talking about stitching and other household chores.
All those things that are designed probably to make them more attractive to a man.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right.
That's why you go to those
etiquette
schools.
Etiquette class. Yeah.
So that then you can be like,
oh, look how they're not going to France.
Look at what a Southern belle I am.
No one's taking these girls to France.
Yeah, all their conversations are like, learn how to stitch so that you can stitch clothes for a man.
For your babies.
So you can kill a man and stitch him a shroud. They
Which,
used it that.
I guess that's cool.
That's
they
ended up
doing. That was cool. That was fun to watch a child do.
But this story could just be so much more interesting if they, instead of all just succumbing to his, like, stupid seduction techniques, instead were like, I see right through you. You're not going to trick us, you piece of shit. We're going to fight back. Or if it is about, like, women's sexuality and them, like, discovering, and they all fuck him, and he's not manipulating them into it. Maybe he's just like, let's all just have a poly relationship, all seven of
it
us.
It is 1862.
That would at least be more interesting than the movie that we have here.
I mean, and it would facilitate the orgy scene that I wanted.
Right.
I think more orgy for scenes. Me, the story, like, I don't mind that everyone's horny. I think if there was one character who expressed more doubt, shout out to my favorite movie, Doubt. If there was one character who was more fucking suspicious of this person who they know is the enemy and it would make sense to be suspicious of, the movie would be very different.
I mean, in that way, it's just like a really sexist movie that basically it's like the second this man comes in, they all lose their minds.
Right.
Because
they're smart. They're out of school.
Like, Yeah, like, especially in the first one, they set it up that Martha is, like, a really kind of, like, no bullshit kind of ball buster.
Oh, yeah, because they have that, like, that moment where you can hear their thoughts in the first movie sometimes. Hallie's like, oh, she does have a point of weakness. I was like, oh, she's a tough bitch.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're supposed to think.
Yeah.
This is interesting. Everyone in this movie needs to grow up and get a library card and move on with their lives.
Well, in 20 years, I will readapt this. And I'll make it better.
Here's the thing. I think that someone could have adapted. Like, I don't know a ton of screenwriters right now off the top, but, like, there is a way.
There's one right here. Do I have a master's degree in screenwriting from Boston University? Yes, I do.
Well, you should adapt it.
Thank you.
But you can see it being adapted in a really cool way.
Totally.
In a cool, where it's like, but, like, adapt it. Don't just do it again.
Mm-hmm. We should get Quentin Tarantino to do it and make it just them blowing him away.
Yeah, end of movie. It's more of a short.
Yeah, exactly.
It's more of a short, the way that some people would do it.
Let's rate the movie on our nipple scale.
Okay, cool.
We have a scale of 0 to 5 nipples where we rate the movie based on its portrayal of the women characters in the movie.
5 being the best.
5 being the best, 0 being the worst. I'm going to give it, God, this movie's so hard. I would say 2. Is that being too generous? Not generous enough? I don't know.
You went first.
Okay.
So. You're setting the
bar. I'm setting the precedent. One, I was very annoyed that Sofia Coppola got rid of the Hallie character, the one person of color in the story who was the most, to me, interesting character in the 1971 version. The fact that, as we discussed before, like a man shows up and everyone loses their shit because we're like, oh, we want to fuck him and now we're all jealous of each other and we can't handle this competition and we're just petty toward each other. Like, that's not good. And a lot of their backstory is just omitted, so we don't really know a lot about these characters. They're not that well fleshed out or developed. So just overall, like, while women outnumber men in this movie by a lot, at what cost?
What did the nipples look like?
The nipples...
I've never said that seriously before.
I was like, what is she about to say?
I looked really pensive. Sorry.
You did. You had a very grim look on your face. And I was like, oh my God, what did I do wrong?
Oh my God, I was thinking about the rest of my life for a second.
The nipples belong to... Okay, well, turtles don't have nipples, so it can't be the turtle.
Okay. and that's too bad.
That's too bad.
We wish that they did, but they are reptiles.
I suppose they... my nipples go
Amphibians.
To... Colin Farrell,
Amphibians.
Whose nipples we see because she scrubs them. She's like, I'm the royal penis cleaner, and I'm going to pull down your undies a little bit and scrub your hip.
Whoop.
But also she scrubs his nipples, and that's what my nipples
either.
Look like.
She's
scrubs. No.
Yeah.
No,
oh, yeah. There was a whole thing of like stop objectifying Colin Farrell. And it's like, honestly, stop objectifying Colin Farrell. I was turned all the way off.
I was like, if you're going to objectify him, can you make it not be like his weird hip bone? That's not a
right.
hot part.
Like, and can we, like, just show his open wound again? Like, I would prefer
that. Convinced that she, like, doesn't like to fuck or something after seeing this movie. Like, it's so sexless. And even the shot of Colin Farrell that's supposed to be hot.
It's
hot.
Like, yeah, it's like if someone describes sexuality to an alien, they're like, this is what humans like. Colin Farrell's hip bone. It's like, this is not what we like. This is not what we wanted. This is not what we signed up for.
Yeah, I don't know how she...
I mean, I feel like most of her work, there's like a lot of, I think, restraint mm-hmm. and
sure.
sexual restraint, and that's a big operating thing. But this, then again, don't adapt this story. This is a fuck story.
Yeah.
Know what you're adapting.
Right.
If you don't want fucking in the movie, that's okay. But then don't adapt the fuck story.
Right.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to make anyone any madder than if you take a fuck story and you take all the fucking out of it.
Yeah.
They're going to get pretty mad.
You can take the fuck out of the fuck story, but you can't
take the fuck out of the fuck. You can't take the story out of the fuck.
Something. I'll figure it out and then I'll tweet it.
Okay.
Be on the lookout for that.
I'm going to give it 2 as well. Although I'm almost tempted to go a little bit lower.
Yes, I was too.
But I mean, it's hard because I feel like the two versions are so conflated in my head now that there are a lot of things I liked about the first movie that the second movie just does not include and doesn't replace with anything. So it's hard to. But anyways, I'll stick with 2. I just think that the story is troubled from the start, but with this adaptation, just nothing interesting is done with it. I know that mm-hmm. we hold Sofia Coppola to kind of a harsher standard, whether we want to or not, and that is not fair. But if you're an auteur filmmaker, I feel like it's not completely unfair either. It's tricky. I hated this movie. It put us all in a bad mood, and I wish that she had chosen a different story to tell for this one.
Mm-hmm. Agree.
The nipples go to Amy.
Little 12-year-old Amy?
Hey, old enough to kiss. Leave it in. Don't edit it out. I look forward to your responses.
Okay,
we're
I'm giving
gross.
It 0 nipples. That's
hell yeah.
How much I didn't like this movie. Okay?
Love it.
And I'm not harder on her. I mean, think about if this was directed by a man, how
what if Michael Bay directed this?
Oh my God, you would be like, I just feel these women have no agency. You've taken out all their sexuality.
I feel like I would be more exhausted and by if a man had directed this movie and not disappointed, which is sort of what I hate to admit that I feel. But I do feel disappointed that a major female director had all these missed opportunities in this story about women.
Yeah, I just think, just looking at it from a pure storytelling standpoint, it was just super bad. It was super bad. None of the characters had motivations. Honestly, it wasn't even that beautiful. Like the way her other movies, you know, it's like Marie Antoinette. You're like, okay, whatever. Like this is cool to watch. And the costumes sucked.
Very quiet.
See, I kind of like the costumes in this movie.
I mean, I liked when they got dressed up. That was cool.
But Sofia Coppola is also like known for having cool soundtracks on her
movie. Oh my God, no soundtrack.
Silent movie.
Oh yeah, not a lot of score.
Movie better be good if you're not playing any hot tunes.
Yeah, I was like, where's the awesome?
They're like, let the kid play the piano again. Let her play a little jaunt.
So I just was like, What does this? Why am I watching this?
It's incredibly boring.
It's so
all
boring.
The
oh
moments
God.
That could be like milked for tension are just like, nope, sorry, nope.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a fuck story. If you're adapting the fuck story, you gotta let him fuck. And she did a bad job. Wow.
I mean, even the sexy nighty was not hot.
The sexy nighty was not hot. The sex scene was not hot with Kiki and
Colin.
Was
that supposed to just be like a little rough? I didn't even...
I don't know. He like fell over because he...
He only got one leg.
He's like... And then he, I guess, landed inside of her because it was a lucky fall. And he was leading with his hard cock. And then they had a scene that you're just like, oof.
And well, by the way, you're like waiting for
At least
for
he's about to die.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. I'm sorry.
Skip this one, gang.
Yeah. Watch the 1971 version.
It's really...
not perfect. It's not even great, I would say. But it's
there's
so much better.
If you want to watch an adaptation, that's
definitely
the one.
And sorry that we talked as much about that movie as we did about the 2017 one. So
there's at least stuff to talk
about. Yeah. Alana, thank you so much for being
Thanks
here.
Thanks for having
thank
me.
You.
Sorry, I just...
Go get your phone fixed.
Oh, yeah. My phone's broken.
Oh, no.
I wish I could blame that on the movie, too, but unfortunately...
She got so mad she threw it. She threw it at the screen and it broke. During the Colin Farrell hip bump.
Where can people find you online?
You can find me at my favorite website. It's really healthy to hang out on it. Twitter.com.
Twitter.com. Fun hang.
At Alana Levinson. Yeah,
awesome.
That's where you should find me. I mean,
follow her there.
And read her work in Mel. It's so good. Read her work everywhere.
Yes.
It's the best.
Aww. Read our work. I don't have any out there, but...
Hey, watch my cartoons. I don't care. Anyways.
Yeah.
Hey, here's a fun new thing you can do is give us money. And so before we go, you can check out our Twitter, Facebook, all the channels you would normally check to find our new episodes. And if you want to kick us a little donation, $1, $2, $1 million. It all goes towards the production cost of the show, and we would very much appreciate it, and we love you so much.
Yeah, so you know, if you like the episodes, if you like us, kick us a few dollars, that'd be great. You can go to paypal.me/Bechdelcast to throw a few dollars our way.
Cha cha cha. Love it.
Follow us and goodbye.
Bye.